linked some of them to the teacher training colleges in the four main provinces. That is the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo province, and Mpumalanga. And in Mpumalanga specifically, there's a teacher education program at Siyabuswa campus of the former Siyabuswa Teacher College. It is being rolled out in Mpumalanga. Secondly, in KwaZulu-Natal, the possibility of establishing an education precinct center on the Indumiso campus of the Durban University of Technology is underway in Imbali, around Pietermaritzburg. In Limpopo, specifically, Honorable Chair, has indicated that the former Sekhukhune College of Education and Giyane College are the sites to be looked into. So there's a lot of work there. In the Eastern Cape, there's a work being done in the Nelson Mandela Metro, linked to the university there. It's so around the Mission Bay campus. So there's work that's happening there already. Because they looked into in which areas there's a possibility of opening up the colleges. But all these colleges, as if you remember, are all linked up to universities. Because currently, the training of the teachers is run through the higher education institution, like the universities. But in addition to that, is in part of dealing with your initial teacher education. But if you deal with the continuous professional development of teachers, that's where you needed to strengthen your teacher centers. That is the project that we are working on as the department, and we have got partners to ensure that we really strengthen the operation of the teacher centers, just to assist with the continuous professional development of the teachers. But secondly, I'm responding to a question that you spoke about accountability in terms of teacher evaluation. You recall that previously there was this collective agreement that was signed with unions, which looked into the teacher evaluation. And that's when you talk about the IQMS. What is critical, it is only the process and the procedures on the teacher evaluation to identify the areas of need of the teachers, to show whether the teacher is competent in the area, and to evaluate teacher overall performance. That is what the IQMS is designed to do. And you can see that people are giving themselves high marks in the process. What we sort of looked into, it is to strengthen the instruments around the teacher evaluation. And we really had to work very, very hard to say that the IQMS in its current form is too bulky and is not focused. And it's easy for people really to cheat around it. And we have revised that instrument and we have submitted it for approval, because the IQMS from its inception was a negotiated thing with unions, and there is a draft collective agreement. We are really working through the ERC to ensure that at least we've got this quality management system, wherein it is not an issue of a teacher evaluating another teacher. It is very specific in terms of ensuring that principals have got work plans, you know, that deals with issues around the principal is curriculum instructional leaders in the school. And that, you will see the second manager has got a role to play in that regard. Now, principals have got a role to play in terms of monitoring whether teachers are doing their functions properly. That is in terms of the IQMS and the QMS. The other question that I wanted to respond to, it is this evidence-based approach to the practice. The issue is, what is it that informs the subject advisor to visit a school? And what are the right questions that subject advisor must go and look into? What we have developed as a system in partnership with Michael Souzel Dell Foundation, it is an instrument which you can see, which speaks to a learner. What has been the performance of a learner in terms of the subject? What is the performance of that particular school in per quarter on the subject? It's something that is feeding back to this district dashboard. So that when you are seated there, you can be able to see that in terms of your school-based assessment, this is the output that that the school is providing to you. And you can be able to also to relate your school-based assessment with your ANA as well with your NSC. And you can see that here there's a need for intervention in a specific topic. So we're getting information on a quarterly basis, then that will inform you which areas therefore you need to intervene on, you know. So that is, we piloted this, it's huge, but it needs really to be rolled out. So I needed to respond to those questions. Lastly, with regard to the incentives policy, I mean, people took a short route of making it a rural allowance. That policy was meant to retrain and attract teachers into the profession. But the policy itself had many attributes that could easily make people to choose the most softest way of really carrying out some aspect of the policy. That is why they took the route of making it a rural allowance. It's a policy on incentives, not rural allowance as such. But the issue of distance and others made people to take that particular matter. So we are in the process really of revisiting this particular policy. You see that... Yes. So we are in the process of really looking into that policy so that it can be able to serve its purpose. You see, the challenges around this matter is that we are taken to court regularly by the teachers because we are no longer incentivizing a post. You end up incentivizing a teacher. Because if people are in the, let's say, 30 kilometers away from a specific town, then all of them will say they want to claim that particular rural incentives. Then it becomes a very serious cash cow, I mean, and the state cannot afford. So that is why you find that in certain provinces, they are withdrawing it, in certain provinces, they are continuing. So we are intervening where it is going to create a problem. And this is a matter that I think even unions, we are talking almost the same level to say, let's revisit this particular incentives policy. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I'm going to respond to five issues that were raised variously by members in different ways. The first issue I want to focus attention on are the questions and the issues that were raised with regard to early childhood development and with specific regard to pre-grade R and grade R. Honourable Nguni and Honourable Mbuchane raised two specific issues on that matter. Honourable Chair, with regard to pre-grade R and grade R, one has to look at it from the angle of early childhood development. And from the basic education sector, we are obliged to work in very close conjunction with the Department of Social Development to address these issues. There is an interdepartmental committee that has been established and has met sporadically, and the basic education sector plays a very meaningful role in that interdepartmental committee. However, if I have to be honest about it, we've also felt as a sector that in some areas the progress has not been as rapid as we would like it to be, and therefore 2 months ago we conceptualized the formation of a task team that will report to this interdepartmental committee, which as a sector we have just set up. This ECD interdepartmental task team is a task team that focuses just on two things in terms of ECD, and that is curriculum delivery and the training of practitioners. And we've set up this task team not only with the involvement of other departments, but with the whole range of stakeholders, including CETA and so on. We've just had the first meeting, and we feel comfortable and confident it's going to actually add value to how we want to proceed with ECD. To answer this question specifically, and the question was, what is being done with regard to pre-grade R? At this point in time, there is a national curriculum framework that has been developed in a final draft form. It was done with the various departments and stakeholders involved. The current situation is that this national curriculum framework, which deals with birth to up to 4 years, this framework is going to be piloted nationally with the various departments involved in 100 ECD centers, and the intention is for this pilot to inform the implementation and rollout in 2015. Further to that, in respect of grade R, the other important thing that one needs to respond to is to say that there's a mandate that has come clearly from government by the National Development Plan for the institutionalization of 2 years of compulsory schooling. Now, this is a clear focus of attention for the basic education sector at this point in time, and it will involve a number of key activities, some of which would involve, for instance, conducting an audit of children aged 4, 5, 6 that are currently in the system. Further to that, there would be policy amendment issues that would have to be dealt with regard to compulsory schooling. That initiative clearly will also have to be done in close collaboration with the other departments. Then related to ECD, and the last aspect that I want to respond to in terms of ECD, the question was also asked, what is happening in respect to grade R readiness, grade R in itself? In terms of grade R readiness, honorable members, in 2013, for the very first time in the country, an impact evaluation of grade R on learning outcomes was conducted. And this was conducted by the sector in close collaboration with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. But what emanated from this was a report that was presented to Cabinet in March of this year. The report had very clear recommendations of what should be done to advance our delivery for grade R. So currently, in terms of grade R, the focus is on ensuring implementation of those recommendations. The basic education sector's focus in terms of grade R has moved towards actual curriculum delivery. Whilst at one time it was a very large focus on the provision of resources, now the focus is on what exactly is going on in terms of the curriculum interaction between the practitioners and the children. And the last thing I would like to draw to your attention is that, and what has advanced our cause in wanting to ensure that grade R is being rolled out in the way that is expected nationally, is the provision of a basic grade R resource pack to all centers. And then clearly, therefore, the challenge becomes for us to ensure and monitor its full implementation and utilization in the ECD sites. Honorable Chair, the second issue I want to respond to is an issue that was raised by Chair herself regarding IOL, which is the department's intention for IOL, meaning the incremental introduction of African languages. And to indicate to Honorable Chair and members that the department has taken that pronouncement very seriously. What has happened to date, I'll just give you some of the key highlights. What has happened to date is that at the draft policy on the incremental introduction of African languages was gazetted for public comment. The comments have been received. Those comments are being integrated into that draft policy, and we are waiting an appropriate time for that to go through the necessary consultation process. In addition to that theory, the practical part of this is that a national pilot is currently in process. Honourable members who served in the committee in the previous term would recall that there were parliamentary questions, detailed questions regarding the IOR pilot, and we did provide clear statistics and other details in response to those questions. But essentially, as I speak, the pilot is in progress. From a DBE point of view, in order to monitor and manage the pilot, there are monthly reports that provinces are required to submit to the Director for GET Curriculum at DBE. Further to that, we have set up an interprovincial committee that deals with this, with the pilot in itself, to track its progress and to also address its challenges. Currently, the most significant challenge that we are experiencing in the pilot is the availability of teachers, qualified teachers, to be able to manage this pilot, and that is the most significant challenge. Further to that, as the DBE has to pronounce on the way forward for implementation from 2015 onwards, there's already an external evaluation process that is in place, and we are awaiting a report. We have not had any prelim reports given to us yet as DBE, but there will be a report via that external evaluation. And then finally, Honourable Chair, currently, in anticipation of the way forward, the DBE's focus is mainly on three areas. The first is the provision of the necessary LTSM for that. The second, and I would argue strongly, the more important one, is our readiness to provide the teachers that would be required for this, for the implementation. And the third aspect is for us to be able to engage in policy revision and to effect the necessary policy amendments that would be required should we move towards implementation of the pilot program. Honourable Chair, the next issue I wanted to quickly comment on was, I think the Honourable Mpunshane referred to the issue of rural education and rural focus, and to indicate to Honourable Members that the Honourable Minister of Education and the Deputy Minister have pronounced very clearly on the realignment and the reorganization of the structure of DBE so that it speaks to core mandates and so that it is directed to areas that have not in some instances received what we consider to be the necessary attention. In view of that, within curriculum, already on the table has been acceptance of the formation of a Directorate for Rural Education. But despite the fact that that's a formalized process, already in the system, what has happened is that from a rural education point of view, one of the greatest challenges that is being experienced in the system is the issue of the provision of multi-grade education. And so in respect of multi-grade education, as we move into this year, we have a DBE sector plan for multi-grade support. This is a multidisciplinary program, support program. It incorporates ICT. But to date, I think one of the most significant things that the sector has done to advance multi-grade teaching and to address some of the significant concerns in terms of rural education is the development of a multi-grade toolkit. That toolkit has been developed, the training for the toolkit has been conducted, and currently our task is to ensure that there is monitoring of the extent of utilization and implementation of the toolkit. Honourable Chair, the next issue I want to comment on, but not exclusively, but to make a contribution to, and that is several members in different ways have raised the issue of strengthening accountability and management of schools, holding school principals accountable, and how the DBE is also maneuvering the issue of the national department, the provincial departments, as well as local offices, as in district offices and circuit offices. I want to just give one contribution from the position of learning outcomes to give you a sense of how accountability is being strengthened and managed in the sector. To ensure that there is effective curriculum delivery as per national policy, that is the National Curriculum Statement from grade R to 12, The National Department of Basic Education has done this variously. The one is in respect of planning and the related instruments and templates that go hand in hand with that planning. The overarching framework that we have is referred to as the NSLA, which is the National Strategy for Learner Attainment. This framework, honorable members, extends from grade R to 12. The framework is very clear in respect of what it expects to be done at a national level, at a provincial level, at a district level, and at a school level. There is quarterly reporting on this framework by provinces at a HEDCOM subcommittee meeting that is convened, and then such reports are then conveyed to HEDCOM. But further to the NSLA, in order to ensure that schools and districts and provinces are being held accountable and that they are reporting on key teaching and learning deliverables, what DBE has done is, in terms of GET, General Education and Training Band, we have taken the annual national assessments of 2013, and on the basis of the analysis of the learner performance in each of those grades, we have developed an ANNA Diagnostic Improvement Plan. This is an overall framework that has been given out to provinces, to districts and schools, with the express instruction that that framework must be used to customize and individualize improvement plans for languages and mathematics per school. And what we are then asking for is reports on progress from provinces on that. The same modus operandi has actually been also implemented for the further education and training band, because what we did with the 2013 examiners' reports and diagnostic analysis was to develop a national framework for all of the national senior certificate subject improvement plans. And we've, in tandem with that approach, have asked that improvement plans with specific subject targets have to be set at a provincial level, at a district level, and at an individual school level. The last instrument I want to speak about, just to give you an example of how monitoring is being strengthened in this area, is we've uplifted curriculum coverage as a major issue to ensure there's accountability. So there is a national template and tool that we use that is used to track whether curriculum has been covered as per the national curriculum statement and its indication of what must be done within so many weeks. That enables us to also manage those situations where, in instances, there are classes as a result of shortage of teachers where the curriculum has not been covered adequately. So those are the plans and the instruments that are being used. But I also want to quickly touch on the modus operandi that is being used by the sector. In different ways, DBE has in recent times strengthened the mandates of the National Education Policy Act, specifically subsection 3 and subsection 8, in respect of the issue of monitoring and ensuring accountability. As a sector, we have just come out of oversight visits to the 9 provinces. The 9 visits, specific visits, were conducted for curriculum oversight to deal with the issues that I was just talking to you about in terms of NSLA, in terms of ANNA, in terms of NSC, to track provincial performance in terms of their targets that they have set, how far they have gone, and the challenges that they have experienced. The assessment and examinations chief directorate is engaging in a similar process with all of the provinces to ensure accountability. But what is very heartening to find is that their level of accountability seems to be getting firmly embedded at all levels in the system, because what provinces and districts are currently engaging in is calling school principals of underperforming schools to centralized venues and requesting them in that forum to present progress reports in respect of targets that they have set, in respect of the school improvement plans, the academic plans, in respect of subject improvement plans, to share at that level and to be held accountable in an open platform how far they have gone. and we are finding that that is becoming institutionalized in many, many ways, and DBE is giving a lot of support to that. Honorable Chair, at the risk of over-talking, the last comment I would want to make, I think it's Honorable Lovemore raised the issue of inclusive education and was concerned about why it does not appear to be evident in the kind of planning and the things that the DBE is articulating to you. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the non-negotiables that have been set aside in that document, Annexure D, one of the deliverables is curriculum. And what has been done in the sector is that that deliverable for curriculum has been unpacked in different ways. With regard to inclusive education for 2014-15 as we're moving ahead, there are three specific project plans that we have dealing with three key areas for inclusive education, which seeks to sustain and enhance those initiatives that started in 2013, with 2013 having declared the year of inclusive. And these three areas, Honorable Lovemore, deal with curriculum differentiation. There's a specific project plan to deal with curriculum differentiation for SEAS, which is the screening, identification, assessment, and support. And then the third area of inclusive education is the issue of sign language. So we have three detailed project plans which are currently in the system to ensure that inclusive education and the declaration of 2013 is enhanced and sustained in 2014. Thank you, Honorable Chair Members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not the chairperson, but I see Mr. Kojana wants to say something. I thought he had completed his questions.
No, I allowed you to
the chair. Okay. No, thanks. Yeah, I think Mr. Kojana has maybe got found some more information. and the CFO will come after.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. There's a question that I think I skipped in responding to. It was a question whether the department gathered information that informs a focus on teacher profiling, and the response is yes. We have conducted the teacher profiling in the Eastern Cape now, and the areas of focus were as follows. The questions in terms of the methodology: are the Eastern Cape educators professionally qualified as teachers? Secondly, are the Eastern Cape educators teaching the subject which they are specializing to teach? And thirdly, how effective are educators of priority areas being utilized? Those are the three questions that we really had to look into. And the research reveals the following information, that more than 90% of the Eastern Cape educators are professionally qualified. Secondly, in overall, only 41% of educators are actually qualified to teach the subjects they are currently teaching. And that 59% of the educators are not trained to teach the subject that they are currently teaching. And on the match rates, there ranges in terms of the subject between 9% to 81%. And we have gone further, and the number of participating educators in this exercise were more than 62,000 into this exercise in the Eastern Cape. And the match rate in the priority subject were per district, and we've done the match rate also per pass rate on those subjects per district. So yes, indeed, we have done the research that informs us that we can do the conduct the profiling and include some elements that maybe the method that we used did not include to include some of those questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. There were two questions that the honourable members raised. One of them was the 30 million for National Initiative to Improve Learning Outcomes. This money is the one that is being transferred for the NECT, for the programs that they are dealing with. And then the other one was the expenditure on legal matters. Now, the figures that we have here are it's total figures, but we didn't show them individually as the honourable member asked. For 2012-13, the expenditure was 1.108 million for legal services, but this excludes the legislative services and the chief directorate. And then for 2013-14, the amount increased significantly. The expenditure was 2.314 million. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, to just cover some that's been left out. On the last one, on legal, that over the period, the increase has been because education has become very, we've had a number of challenges and so forth, and that's been the reason that we've also had to spend more in that regard. But where we win a case, we basically claim costs in that regard, and I'm not sure, there may have been instances where we may have paid costs as well. But more often than not, we refuse. KRG is Karigude. And then just to indicate that on the EA, the transfer and resignation, part of another, I don't want to say it's a priority, but an area of focus would be is how we manage human resources in the sector, particularly in the provinces, in that we have over 400,000 employees. It has been highlighted that in human resources sometimes we put people that are not necessarily qualified because you think that it's not an important area. The other is that sometimes the protocols or the controls that are supposed to be managed, they are not put in place, in particular when you're paying people salary, when you're supposed to have about three people to basically give approval. You find that that's not followed, then you get the creation of people getting increased salaries when they're not. So this is an area that we need to look at, and I think the examples that the Honourable Member raised is basically not in line with how the processes should have been followed in that regard, whether in a transfer or a resignation. But it's an area I think we need to look at and pay attention to, because compensation of employees is basically the forms over 80% of the education budget. I think the CFO has covered the NECT. Basically, it's a transfer. It's to get the involvement of the private sector to get involved in supporting education. So I think that's just the start of our contribution. As the contribution of business goes up, we may be required to spend more money to support that. With regard to the question of the status of the Annexure D, Annexure D is basically coming from it's coming from the various Lakotlas, which means it's been through the cabinet Lakotla, which will be endorsed as basic, and then it's part of the NDP. It's you'll also find it its origins in the NDP as well, which is being translated into a program of action for government, which is referred to as a medium-term strategic framework. Obviously, if it becomes a program of government, then that needs to be there needs to be an implementation plan for that, as well as funding in that regard. So work is being done with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, that those that are identified as the priorities are then included in our strategic plans and so forth, as well as ensuring that Treasury funds those if the DPME has asked for those to be included. And what we have done with under the leadership of the Minister and the Deputy Minister is to identify those that we believe are crucial for us to ensure that the sector does move forward. So that is the status, and some of the targets have come from the DPME itself. The source documents are some that we have in education. In certain instances, we'll need to look at how we gather and measure the impact in order to report on it accurately. To just cite an example, we had an indicator in the last term on cleanliness in schools, but we didn't even know how it got there, but we didn't know how to measure it. There was an issue about cleanliness, not just for schools, but cleanliness, so we couldn't measure it. So these are some of the things that we need to look at in terms of reporting, which then creates difficulty. I think the other would be is that while these are national targets, for different provinces, the implication is that it needs to be disaggregated, in particular with regard to the learner assessment. You'll notice as well, we previously spoke about 60%. Now I think the figures have gone up to 75%. While we may not have reached our targets, but I think it's something that we need to work towards. So this is basically a document that is being finalized, but it's coming from the mandate of the ruling party, basically. But you'll find that other parties also had similar kind of proposals as well. Some may have been more radical than maybe the ruling party. I think, Chair, I've covered this one.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I know you must be hungry by now. Lunch is ready, but I've got so many indications that honorable members do want to have a second round, the follow-ups to the questions that have been made, of which I think it is important that we allow that second round. But I believe it will be quick. Let us just go through the follow-up questions now, of which will be very short then, so that as we adjourn, we just adjourn for good, we have our lunch, then we leave. If you can allow me to do that, please. I know really we are hungry, others have got sugar level problems and whatever. Maybe we can just go out and have a cup of tea, but let us try by all means to finish this one then. Then we leave, other than breaking for lunch and coming back. I think the hands have. I've got more hands now. Okay? Let me do this so that. Which way must I go now? Okay, let me give a chance to Honorable Khoza. Is it Khoza or Khoza, that one? Sa or Za?
Thanks, President.
Khoza.
Khoza,
okay,
yes.
Okay, let me just note you and note all the hands so that you can come in. It's Honorable Khoza. Can I see the hands again? Honorable Khoza. Oh, Honorable Basson, Nguni. Oh, I think everyone wants to talk in this order. Let us just follow the line, please. Honorable Khoza, you are the one to start.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Minister, I wanted to talk about what was raised before by the Honorable Deputy Minister on the high drop rate and vis-a-vis high reputation. But I'm not as yet clear as to what is it that is going to be done to address these issues, because they are there, we are living with them. But she spoke a bit about it, but I'm up to now not yet clear as to what are we going to do about it. Those that are there, they are even getting older. It's like they look to be not no more ready to be at school. What are we doing about it? I understand there are FETs where we're supposed to be taking them, but we also have areas where you see we've got those that are very poor cannot access the FET colleges. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is just the follow-up on that KRG. Now is clear. Maybe that's why I asked. It was not clear to me because this curry gude is not visible as it is supported in the budget here in maybe in the province where I come from. My question is now, who monitors this curry gude center or this curry gude institutions, I don't know. And to whom do they report in the district level? Because really, it seems as if they are is a very important part of support that they school. Can't we also use this Karigude to support the 550 matrices that are upgrading on expert levels on their own? Because we just heard, or sometimes we just heard, that there was a Karigude in that factory, in that firm, but when coming to know how effective are they, it's really not clear, so that at least we can have hands on the district level for their job well done or not done.
Yeah, Chairperson, mine is on the IQMS. That is a good program, and I want to believe that educators are missing in terms of this one, because they are standing to benefit if you are taking it very serious, whilst at the same time it was going to yield results for us as department, because the quality of teaching and learning would be enhanced if they were doing it correctly. Perhaps it was advocated wrongly, because it was having an incentive in the first place when it was introduced. And educators concentrated on the incentives in terms of trying to identify the gaps and loopholes that they have so that it can be developed. The second take on my side is on the question of the quality of furniture. I'm happy, Minister, that we're going back to the desk, but in addition to that, I would suggest that we also look into the question of saying the provinces are supposed to look at the issue of the single desk, because the double desk, in a way, they create problems when it is exam times. Because when exams are written, the desk that is accommodating two learners is taken and being provided to a single learner, and the other one is remaining without a desk. Then it creates chaos when it is exam time, and we think if the emphasis can be put in terms of having standards, that the single desk can be procured. Lastly, it is the norms and standards on funding for GET schools and FET schools. When I'm subjected to corrections in terms of this one, I think we're using a model that is funding the two types of schools the same, whereas the demand in terms of expenditure is not the same. That is why perhaps we see those primary schools building nice carports, and you miss out, and if you are a poor secondary school, you cannot be able to build the carport, and they think that you are not using the money correctly, because there's something, there's nothing nice that they can be able to see. So if perhaps that can be looked at, the others they were taking.
I'm just pleading now that we try to summarize, please. Honorable Mngoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. I asked one question last time about this issue of EEA, more especially in terms of transfers, and you see, I did not get an answer there. In fact,
you're
it's
out.
A...
He responded, Honorable Mngoni, I remember. I think you're just out to get some fresh air, but that won't stop you from getting a response. When we go out of here, you can still go to Mr. Kavenda. Was it Mr. Kavenda who responded on that? Or it's Mr. Kojan, but he did respond to that one.
The cause of nature is very cold, you see. You have to go to...
Yeah, unfortunately, you didn't...
But I will go to court.
Yeah, please.
Next time I will leave my camera, my phone to take to record. And then another issue is the issue of equipment in the teacher centers. Teacher centers, in many areas, they are there. The buildings are there. But I think they are meant to help the educators in terms of making some what do they call these things? My experiments and so forth and so forth. And also it boosts the teacher, but when you visit there, there's nothing at all. There's this issue, Chairperson, of security at schools. We usually say communities must take ownership of the schools. But the same communities are the ones that are stealing. The same communities are the ones that are stealing. You see, and then Nazi, they must take care of us as buildings here, but they are still stealing, they are stealing from us. So when they the improvement of schools, we help schools with the issue of the security. Because some of them, they are not even fans. I don't know what you can do in the issue of enrollment and falsifying these documents, the enrollment. The minister has touched that issue of saying you find that they order many books for 200 instead of 100 kids. The head counting is fine. But I see a challenge in where a principal is doing that because he wants to keep some of the teachers. Then so balloon at this enrollment. Because he wants to keep some of the teachers. Once the learners are gone, because what we don't look at the school, the curriculum of the school. We look at the enrollment of the school. Once the learners are few, what happens? The teachers go, then the school suffers. So we must, and another thing, the issue of the salary, remuneration. If the learners are few, you are given a certain number of days or of years, then they are going to cut whatever the salary. You see. So we must be looking at the issue. How can we standardize such that that thing does not happen? Because we can keep on charging people will have no one to work in. The nonsense standard for a school. If we say a school has got a human resource, more especially when it comes to support staff and general assistant, Bakosh, Chairperson, I don't believe me. A school should not be having an admin clerk. Should not be having a general assistant, regardless of small or big of the school, Chairperson. You see, a general assistant must be standardized. This school must have one general assistant and an admin clerk. Because we expect the principal to be attending meetings, being a clerk, being a GA, a general assistant, and so on. So it ends up she ends up not performing the I think those were the few that I wanted to. In fact, we are adding to job creation. Isn't it that we want to create jobs? Yeah, we must create jobs in one way or the other.
Thank you. Those were your four questions.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I just have two questions. With regard to the National School Nutrition Program, do we follow a criteria with regard to providing these schools with the conditional grants, and what is the criteria? Because we do find in certain circumstances that schools don't even have enough classrooms. So where is the preparations done? Who does the preparations? And what happens to the consumables if it is not used? And then the second question, I do not know if I read it correctly, with regard to the occupation-specific dispensation for therapists, I see it's being phased out in 2016-17. Could I be given an answer as to why it's being phased out? I come from an Alsen background, special needs, education, and it is very important for occupational therapists to be on board to assist our special need learners. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, can I just make this announcement? The minister has to leave now. He has to catch a flight because there is a meeting that she needs to be addressing at 6 p.m. But I said... It's sad, I know, but can we allow her to leave because we do have our duties and our duties that will continue to take care of our questions. Hopefully we will be with the minister very soon. These days we are still going to be interacting with her up until our budget vote, and immediately after that the workshops that have been promised. So we are still going to see a lot of her. So thank you very much, Minister. Thank you so much. Can we then continue?
I've got two things. The one is on the opening of the teacher training colleges that was referred to. Now, obviously, one would say thank you for the one in Sekhukhune and Fetakhomo because it's a beautiful building, very neglected at the moment, and I'm sure we could utilize it much better. Giane, I can't remember what it looks like, but I think in the near future we must also revisit the other districts like Mustek in Seshego. I think it's completely underutilized, and it's actually sort of quite a new building in terms of how long buildings can last. And so I can go on. But I would like to, I will also at a later stage talk to the minister, but it's about the new thing on retrieving of textbooks at the end of every school academic year. And how we're going to deal with that and the top-ups. I mean, it's exams now, and there are still schools, I know for sure, that doesn't have textbooks, but they're writing exams. So how sure are we that going to retrieving of books and only order top-ups will guarantee a textbook to every learner in every grade in every school? That, to me, is a major concern. I'll stick with that. And the norms and standards, I have an issue. I don't know if the CFO or somebody else. But it's all about where I come from. I think norms and standards are normally paid out in May and November. In Limpopo, as my colleague quite correctly raised, and I think in other provinces, if there isn't something on the budget, then it doesn't get paid over and somebody decides on a lesser amount. But that also doesn't reach. And we now found, and it happens in the poorest of our communities, at the poorest schools, where parents now must send kids with toilet paper or 20 rand for photostats or this or that or the other. I don't think that can be acceptable. And I think the national department must take serious note of that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the Minister particularly her long explanation of spreading good practices across different provinces, having different good practices and being able to, through a national interaction, being able to spread that. I don't buy it, however, fully as the need for DBE to be as involved as they are with provinces and districts. It's because we are so dysfunctional. I don't buy that you need 8,000 visits by moderators to check on IQMS, if IQMS is actually functioning properly. But we'll take that forward through the year. I am very interested in NEDU status, Chairperson. It's mentioned, but it's mentioned as a... I don't know what you call it, like a branch or something within the department, not as any kind of independent body. And, matric results. It is indicated that for matric results, that in 2014 we want to achieve 75% pass rate. Now, we achieved higher at the end of 2013, so why is it going down? And then, Chairman, lastly, I'm just going to come back to the Nexa D, because the Nexa D has got some damning statistics in it. It really has got damning. If you say, for instance, that only 41% of our teachers are competent to teach the subjects that they're teaching, that's a damning statistic. You say that 74% of schools comply with minimum infrastructure standards. I don't believe that. I don't know where you got it from. The last survey that you did showed 55%. And I don't know where the 74% comes from. So I think some of them are questionable. But what I want to know is, bottom line, simple question, yes or no, Can I quote from this and say the Department of Basic Education says this is happening now, the Department of Basic Education says it will do such and such by such and such a date? Does this have that status? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just three areas that have been covered on the first one, that is NEDU. But just to urge the department that if we have to take the department seriously when it comes to performance evaluation of principals, deputy principals, this NEDU matter has been with the department for more than 4 years or 5 years now, and nothing is happening. And a bill was proposed to that effect, but please, can you expedite this process? The second issue, Chair, where I want some more clarity, it doesn't seem we have same understanding of this issue of, sometimes we say opening of colleges, and some other times say reopening of colleges, teacher colleges. We don't seem to have the same understanding, or at least I don't seem to have to share the same understanding as that of the department. You know, you talk of opening a campus there and another campus somewhere. You know, to me, I had the understanding of reopening colleges where even you look at the question, who is teaching, training the teachers, you know, especially for lower grades, because, you know, I've been at a university, I know what's happening there. You know, the focus is on more on academic, and now when it comes to real methods for grade R's, and a professor, you know, won't be, you know, he's interested on research and other things. So this whole concept of reopening of colleges, I think, must be, we must share the same understanding as it we don't seem to. The last one is also on this, you call it now policy incentives, not rural allowances. That some people chose to take just one aspect of what you call, not policy, what? Incentives policy. Some people chose to take just one aspect, rural allowances. It was introduced by the former minister, Minister Pando, as rural. She referred to it as rural incentives. Now, what is said about it? You know, some teachers have been given these allowances, and in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, the argument that they were given wrongly, and it was going to be deducted from their salary. Just imagine, you know, it's like a loss of office when you budget accordingly. Now, how did it happen that they were given wrongly? Please, if again, I urge the department to look very close at this policy, if it's policy at all, this rural allowance or policy, something. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. But I know you've been asking the department. I'm not responding on behalf of the department. But I can share with you this one on rural allowance in KZN, that at least it has been rectified. I know it has been an issue because it might not be a national issue, but they are working on it, on the reinvestment on that one. But the department can still go on to explain on that one. There is one thing that I haven't heard anything about, the QLTC. Is it normal there in the department? Is it not important? Are we putting an end on it? Where is the campaign? Is it budgeted for? What is happening when we talk of that campaign? Are we still going to hear of anything of this, and where is it in your plans? That is quality teaching and learning campaign that I'm talking about. Again, DJ, how do we account to, how do provinces account on the grants, the various grants that they are having? Looking at the budget, there is a lot of it's quite a high percentage that goes through to the provinces through the grants, and sometimes it's a little bit difficult to follow up on how these, I can count them, you know them. And I hope our honourable members do. We have those pink books with all the grants of which it has been distributed to us as members, just to familiarise ourselves with all the grants that we have in the department. I hope everyone has got them. But it's quite difficult sometimes to make a follow-up as to say, how are they being accounted for, and can you, what can you say when it comes to the issues of the grants. Lastly, with me, there is this thing of building new schools of which we are all happy about, following all the norms and the standards and the specifications of what a school is, laboratories and whatever. But can I request the department to make a follow-up, because after that, in the provinces like the Eastern Cape, that is where we're also looking at the question of rationalizing the schools, the rationalizing of schools. You find that these schools now become so much overloaded, they don't respond, or they no more, you know, respond to the need as to why the school was made, was built at the first time. I know one of us, it's a pity because I'm referring to the previous experiences that we had when we went around on our oversights. You find that a school, yes, is a new school, but it can't respond really to the needs of the community. It's even more overloaded because the surrounding schools that were muddy and what, they have been closed. I've got quite a number of examples that I can make from the side of the Eastern Cape, of which I feel that's one of the things that we must make a follow-up as to say what best, how best can we make sure that these new schools that are there, that are very beautiful, but they do respond some of the time to the needs of the communities. But there is a specific case that I need to come up with to you, DG, of which I will be in contact with you, that I would really appreciate if you can make a follow-up on, because that school is in a crisis on the on the enrollment that is there. It's just too much for one school, but that is a new school. But going to that school, you cannot see now that it's the way it is, you know, it is being utilized. Thank you. Yeah, just briefly respond to those questions, then we'll call it a day. Yeah.
Chair, I hope the colleagues will be brief, but I'll start with Dr. Komalo. She's still there.
Thanks, Chair. I'll respond to two questions. I mean, the first one was around the high dropout rates and what is it that the department is going to do about it. I think our approach is to, first of all, fully understand what are the push and pull factors, you know, that are underpinning what we are seeing happening. And the General Household Survey actually told us, you know, some of the reasons why children drop out of school. Part of it included poor academic performance. There were also issues around the socioeconomic factors, you know, didn't afford school fees or uniforms or some of the supplies that were necessary for school. The third one was that children felt that they didn't have future prospects to aspire to, and that education, you know, was therefore meaningless for them. And so what it means, you know, from some of these three key ones was that we need to find an integrated approach, because it's not one factor that makes children not to attend schools. So part of it is making sure that, you know, subject choices are clarified, there's career guidance, but also that we have an early warning system to identify those learners that are struggling so that we can provide them extra support and try and make sure that they do better in school. Ultimately, it is clear to us that we will have to also involve, you know, the whole of South African communities, because, you know, even the president said it in the State of the Nation address that we need to make sure that children from 5 to 17 are all in school. And I think it's about putting that responsibility back to communities. If you are an adult and you see a child who's of school going age and who's not at school, you need to go back and find out why they are not there and make sure that they come back and continue in school. So what has helped also is that there are a number of pro-poor policies that the department is implementing. So from the no-fee schools policy to the school nutrition program, and all those are making sure that children are able to access school. This is something that we need to really pay more attention to it. And like I said, that integrated approach is one of what we're implementing. And we have a few pilot areas where we're putting all those things together to try and learn lessons and see how we make sure that those successes are also integrated into the rest of the system. Ultimately, we also must make sure that we identify those barriers to learning, you know, for children. So if there's issues of health, we need to make sure that eyes are tested, ears are tested, and that those services are availed with the Department of Health. If there are social issues, you know, the grants are made available through the Department of Social Development. If there are learning difficulties, we need to respond to those within their setting. And really just making sure that all role players take their responsibility, and we use the school as a site. We identify what the particular challenge is with a particular learner and make sure that the services are available to them. But ultimately, like I'm saying, I think we need to go back to Ubuntu and making sure that we prioritize schooling, and all of us make sure that children who are school going age are in school, and as education we'll do our own, which is the responsibility within the setting as I've outlined. There was also, Chair, a question around the school nutrition program that I'll respond to, that asked, you know, how are the schools chosen and who does the preparation and the issues around the challenges of the preparation facilities. The NSNP is a conditional grant, and it is intended for learners in poor schools, you know, in quintile 1-3, primary and secondary schools. So who gets it is those schools that fit the profile and the mandate of the grant. We know that some provinces have extended it beyond that original mandate. We, however, say if you do extend it beyond those targeted schools, then the funds must be found outside of the grant, because the grant is meant to reach those particular learners and schools in those circumstances. We have parents generally from communities who come in and volunteer to cook and to serve learners, and those are engaged by the SGBs to come in, and then they would receive the appropriate training to enable them to be able to adhere to hygiene and food preparation standards in the task that they undertake. It is no secret that schools were not built traditionally to provide school meals, so issues of preparation facilities are a major challenge. And we've had the support, you know, from partnerships that have been assisting us over the number of years to build kitchens and storage facilities within schools. And the private sector in particular has really come on board in doing this. What we are doing is that all the new schools that are now being built come in with a fully fledged nutrition center. So a preparation facility, a storage facility, and where funds are available, also with a dining hall, to make sure that those facilities are there. But it's a backlog that we really will have to catch up, you know, over time to try and deal with it. I'm not sure by consumables whether it was meant some of the food stuff that stays behind, for instance, at the end of the term, or, you know, when it reaches, when it's close to expiry. But if that was the question, then...
Also on the temperature, like in some areas of the province, it's 40 odd degrees, and there's no place to cool, to put it. So there's no nutrition in that food, actually.
It's all part of the training, you know, that we undertake. And I think one is about meeting what people know they should be doing, but also the reality of the lack of facilities. And really, in many instances, opening up a window is a good thing to do. So it's part of the input that we provide, you know, and say, even in your cooking spaces, but also in your storage spaces, you need to do that. But I did concede at the beginning that our schools were not built traditionally to provide a school nutrition program. So very often you have to work with what you do have. And I think the fact that all the new schools are coming on board are being built with those facilities is a major achievement. What we're finding also is that when we implement the program and the funds are transferred directly to schools, schools are able to accrue some savings, and they then use those to build the facilities. But, you know, you can appreciate that the money that we get from the National Treasury is intended for this meal itself. So there isn't money that is available to build the facilities. So in some instances, it's not a wholly, you know, safe and a complete and ideal situation, you know, but all of us work together to try and bridge those gaps where they do exist. The schools are also able to identify needy learners, in particular those that come from child-headed households, those that are orphaned, and those generally would be the ones that would, at the end of term, when schools close, and they realize that the food can't be kept there for the next, for the opening of schools, that they then package parcels for them to get. But very often, those are not huge quantities, because if they adhere to what they need to be ordering, then really your stock should be depleting by the time that you close schools. So there shouldn't be piles and piles of supplies that sit there on any point. And if those exist, then it means somewhere along the value chain there has been lack of adherence to the principles have been in the guidelines, because those exist and they've been developed by us together with the provinces to make sure that we guide how the program is implemented, including from a storage perspective to food preparation and also saving. All the time mindful that we need to preserve, like the Honourable Member is saying, the nutritional value of the meal. Because now we've moved beyond access. We are providing the meals now to make sure that the meal is of adequate nutritional value so that the health and the educational benefits can be accrued by the children.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start with the issue around the opening of colleges, whether this is it reopening or opening of colleges. I think the basic issue, if we could recall, has been always about the competency to teach versus the qualifications matter. That is a debate that led to the closure of colleges, and we in the same country, we advocated for the reopening of colleges. And I think the basic issue is around looking into the programs. We have asked higher education institutions to do really a research on this matter so that down the line we don't say let's close again colleges, and you know, because the whole debate is around competency to teach versus the qualifications matter. So we are in agreement maybe between ourselves and higher education, because this is the role of higher education around the colleges, the initial teacher education. Indeed. So it's a matter that we are looking into. Once we've got that research paper being concluded, it therefore will give us a real way forward on how do we respond adequately on this matter. You are correct that we need to really look closely on this thing, on the matter of the rural allowance. So I concur with you, because it's as you could also look into the matter. Are you incentivizing the post or a teacher? You see, that is why there's a need. That's why there's a need for us to revisit it again. Because how provinces write their own a policy towards implementation of the incentives. They name it as a rural allowance. You see, but I think it's much more. It will be much more important for us to say what are the gaps in terms of the policy. Well, after a policy has been there for some time, certainly that we need to say what has been the gaps in terms of the implementation of that policy, so that we can be able to articulate this matter much more accurately. So that's the work that we are doing currently. So we'll be able to provide that information, because at different provinces it is implemented differently. Now, let me also concur with honourable members around us to revisit MASTEC. We'll certainly do that. That it has got a huge capacity for it to deliver as a provincial teacher development institute, whether it's operating optimally or not. We'll revisit that. You refer to MASTEC in Limpopo.
Yes,
that I'm responding to that one.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't
know. It comes from Eastern Cape. So MASTEC is in Limpopo. Now, the other issue that was raised, which we need to follow up quickly, is around the reduction of salaries that was raised due to the decrease in terms of the numbers. In my recollection, it may not affect teachers as such, but I think it might affect the principals in relation to the increase from post level from 3 to 4, you know. But in terms of it to be reduced, I'm not very sure, but I will need to get that the information around, so that you can investigate further, if you would agree with me. But let us investigate what. But I know that in terms of the learner numbers, once they increase also the level. But I've not heard the reduction so far. I think it's a matter that we need to investigate.
Can you switch off the mic?
So I will investigate it, so that I know what are the specifics with regard to that. I think around the standards, not the standards for clerks as well as your facto terms and the rest, they are there in terms of the post provisioning. You know, they are standards which indicate that in terms of the compensation of employees, you get the ratio of 80 to 20, for which 88% goes to the compensation of employees, not teachers. Then within the 80, when you translate the 80 into 100, it means 85 will be teachers and 15 will be for the support staff in schools. But I think the challenge is not necessarily the norms and standards. It is in the implementation where the challenge is around those norms and standards for staffing of schools. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, just two quick responses on the issues that were raised for KRG, the Karikude program. The two issues, one is the availability of monitors. There are no monitors that are existent at a local cluster level or district office level or provincial office level. Monitors are appointed nationally, and each monitor that is appointed is responsible for 4 KRG coordinators. And then DBE also does its own sampling, because there are no officials appointed at those levels. Then secondly, Honourable Chair, the department is mindful and accepts that despite the fact that there are statistics that indicate there are a large number of adults who have received certification, but nonetheless, the issue of the awareness and the advocacy is certainly an issue that needs improvement. It's for this reason that the plans for 2014 and 2015 has the first key deliverable as the development and the operationalization of a uplifted communication strategy, and some of the activities that have been pronounced for the strategy involves television, radio advertisements, posters and flyers and so on, in acknowledgement that there is insufficient advocacy for that program. The second issue, very quick response, Honourable Chair, in respect of the targets. Action Plan 2014 had articulated targets over a three-year period, and these targets spoke to grades 3, 6, 9, and 12. And the target that was set in respect of the National Senior Certificate was 75% in respect of that. Hence, it's indicated as 75. But the actual performance was 78.2. And then if you look at the supplementary examination results, that took us past 80. So the targets that have been set have for 2014 will differ from province to province, and the range is generally between 3% to 5%. And nationally, we are hopeful and confident that for 2014 that we will surpass the 80% in the final examination in itself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question on the OSD conditional grant, the allocation for 2 years. At the end of the 2 years, National Treasury is going to transfer the money to the provinces through the equitable share. So the department won't be managing this part after the 2 years. And then on the question asked by the Honorable Chair on accounting on conditional grants, provinces submit reports on a monthly basis to the department. But over and above that, National Treasury, because they have access to all the systems, they also draw their own reports and they send them to us so that we are able to compare that the figures that are given to us for expenditure are not manipulated, they are correct figures. And then every quarter there is a report, a narrative report that is submitted to the department, but those reports are submitted to National Treasury and the NCOP on a quarterly basis or on the prescribed date. Thank you.
Just to wrap up what's left, starting with the last one of the grants as well, the Auditor General also has asked for certain information, even though the money has been transferred to the provinces. In fact, we are even threatened to be qualified. Like, to give an example, we need to provide the registers of the learners who had the meals. And so that's something we still have to find answers to. We try to remedy so there's more controls and for accounting that we need to look at. To answer your question regarding QLCC, QLCC is there. Basically, it's being repositioned as well. an impact study, review of it is being looked at and to look at how we take it forward. But also in the repositioning, the NECT, the National Education Collaboration Trust, also does a social mobilization and has set up structures which goes beyond the stakeholders that the QLCC targets. And it has brought in people from outside, like judges and people who have left those communities to come and get involved. So we're looking at ensuring that there's some alignment between what the QLCC does and the NECT, and that they complement each other. So I think as we unpack that, we will give you, we'll come and present the plans and the program to take it forward. So this QLTC is not this thing, but it's similar to like Kari Gude. We need to uplift in terms of advocacy and communication as well. I think we'll discuss with you regarding the school you're talking about, but the minister did mention about when we talk of rural schools, this mergers and rationalization affects these schools. And one of the deficiencies that has been in the past, that the merger would happen and that the school where the merge is going to happen and is going to exist, the learners would just be transferred with the teachers. But there's a lot more that needs to happen, we are saying, that before you even do that, you need to ensure that the school that's going to exist has the capacity to receive the children. Do they have the teachers? Do they have the desks and textbooks and so forth before you do? Sometimes it's better off to just leave the children, even if you saw it was a poor condition, than to put them now into an overcrowded or they don't have teachers for certain subjects. So I think that's high on the agenda to look at. on NIDU, basically there was a directive from the Department of Public Service and Administration for NIDU to develop a business plan in establishing an Office of Standards and Compliance. So the bill, which was intended for Parliament, is no longer applicable. This Office of Standards is being established. NIDU is at the moment doing its work. In fact, its annual its report in terms of the work that it's done for the last 12 months is almost ready to be released, and we'll keep you informed of that. But it will remain an independent government component. It is not just part of the department, but it will be independent, and there's a process to be followed for approval from the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Public Service and Administration, and Cabinet to do that. But irrespective of that happening, NIDU is continuing. As part of this repositioning that we're looking at, the Minister wants to discuss with NIDU what is going to be expected from NIDU in terms of sharpening its work, in that some of the time NIDU, in terms of the work that it's doing, it's telling us what we already know in some respects. But as to look at making it, in terms of looking at some other areas of research and so forth, to advise in terms of what we need to do in the sector. So I think that's NIDU. There was the issue of retrieval and top-ups as well. I think when we talk of the one book per child per grade, there's a number of elements when you unpack it, in that there are books in the system at the moment, so it's about retrieval, there's top-up. Even when you look at, it's not about, buying totally new books each year. So that is also part of the program before we get to the one child, that's how we're going to get to the one child. We're not going to be like, we're going to have 12 million books for a child per subject. We will never afford that. That's not going to happen. But already in the system, we've done the caps. Books have been bought, so now it's about top-up and there's retrieval. If that happens, there will be the LTSM budget will be there, which will be available to maybe cover the gaps that are there in terms of trying to catch up. And it's in fact one particular problem I won't mention, but we are concerned about, but the others are closer towards getting towards 90%+. One child per book. Yeah, retrieval needs to happen. If it doesn't happen, it's like buying books every year for every child, and that is unaffordable and will never sustain. I think on the norms and standards of school funding, we will investigate for Limpopo. I think on NHD we'll check the statistics, but to indicate to Honorable Lovemore as a yes or no answer, I put it to you. She's putting it to me. It's no for now. It's no. But in a couple of weeks, by the end of the month, it will be a different position. Because we need to have confirmation that these are the things we must do, then it's a yes. But for now, it's a no, in that we have to get processes through to get approval to say we are running with it. I cannot...
It's not a no in the sense that nothing has been done.
Yeah. Treasury, DPME... In that, if we said yes today and tomorrow we don't have the money, then we would have set ourselves up that we came to the committee and said we're doing this, but we have not been given the funds in some respects, in some areas. So we need that clarity going forward, but it's only a matter of a few weeks. That's why I'm saying it's a no if you want to go out and use it now, but in time you will actually be aware of it because you will be seeing it in the past.
Thank you very much, DG. You know, we always say TBE, there are so many things that are good, that are being done, but you always underplay them. Even today, the issue of childhood, I don't know how can we make sure that the communities out there know about this program, which is very good, and we're getting very good results out of it, but the way it is being underplayed, I don't know what is happening. Why are you not claiming that victory, to say there's so much that is being done when it comes to that? all of the time we don't speak much of that. We've got other programs like the nutrition program that Dr. Kumar has been talking about. It's a fact, if you can look at the good side of what this program has done out there, there's so much. Yes, we understand we still have hiccups, we still have challenges here and there, but the good that she has done, it's so much, is something that we cannot even talk about. So, really, I do think... indeed, Honorable Bojan, I think that's a very good story to tell, of which sometimes we don't tell it the way we are supposed to be, to be telling it. But when it comes to this poor program that the department has come up with, I think we have made this country proud when it comes to that, and the nutrition program has been leading in that, of which we still feel and we still hope it will be well managed and is still going to lift up the department and the good thing that it's doing out there. Again, DJ, let me thank you on behalf of the committee for, you see that fine the Honourable Member is having there with all the acts that are there in our department. I think that was the perfect thing that we have done. Thank you very much for that. All of us as members, we know exactly what are the regulations, what are the acts that we are governing that the department. Maybe we need to plan again a session where we can just take us through that file. But as for now, I think everyone is, that was a very good thing to do. I'm just leading again then. There are some documents that you have just talked about, of which it can even, those documents can even help us as we do our oversight, to play our role. Like those base, this resource pack for great art, I'm pleading that each and every member of this committee do get to that. For him or her, when he goes to the school, it's easier even to look at that class of great art, who knows exactly what to expect, what should be there, please, if you can organize something like that for us, we can be happy. There are so much. We have even asked that 2019, the action plan that we have, please, if you can get that, it can assist us as we move forward, even before our budget vote, that's one of the improvements that we need so much. But otherwise, thank you very much for the good presentation. Honorable members, thank you very much for your robust questions and the comments that you have made. I hope this meeting was, it was an eye opener. We've had a very clear understanding of our department, though as I'm saying, we still have so much to do as we move forward. So let's go out there now. We look to next week. We'll be having a meeting with our three entities, and the documents, the strategic plans are with us. Let's go there, look at them, study MADUC, look at LRC, look at SAIS. Those are the three entities that we'll be engaging with next week. And I hope, again, our next week meeting will be enjoyable as this one. Thank you ever so much. And thank you for allowing me to keep you so much. I know you're hungry. Lunch is already outside. Just grab something before you go home.
Are you shocked?
Yes.
You still need your grandmother.
Why not?